You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So Luke 18 is an interesting parable. Jesus told them a parable. Remember, parables come, the word parable comes from a term which means to throw down or throw next to. So it's like fodder for horses. So here's some fodder for y'all. He said, in a certain city, there was a judge who neither feared God nor respected man. So this judge was unjust. Why was he unjust? He didn't fear God. In Hebrew history, judges were supposed to fear God and represent God in their judgments. He didn't fear God. So we read, when Moses appointed judges, he said to them, hear the cases between your brothers and judge righteously between a man and his brother, or the alien who's with him. You shall not be partial in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not be intimidated by anyone, for the judgment is God's. Similarly, Jehoshaphat, when he appointed judges, said this. He told the judges, be careful what you do, for you are not judging for men, but for the Lord, who will be with you when you make judicial decisions. Fear the Lord and make careful decisions, for the Lord our God disapproves of injustice and partiality and bribery. To say he did not fear God was to say he was unjust. God wasn't the operating principle or person that was driving his judgments. He was also unjust because of his disdain for others. See, it uses this term, who neither feared God nor respected man. This language for respect is simply carries the idea that he held people in regard. And this suggests he did not hold them in regard. In Deuteronomy 24, again, about judges, you shall not pervert the justice due the sojourner or the fatherless or take a widow's garment in pledge. I think it's especially interesting here that God has a lot of attention, in terms of his justice, a lot of attention is drawn to those who are weak. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, give me justice against my adversary. He didn't fear God. He had really disdain for people. And this widow is coming to talk with him. So this is our heroine. She is a persistent widow. You know, in this culture, social services were your family. There were no social services. So how did you get help? Your family gave you help. And if you were fatherless, as we've read earlier, or you were a sojourner, or you were a widow, very often you didn't have social support. And people could be very exploitive. And so they would have to go to a judge to get a decision made about how to protect themselves. Think about Ruth in the Old Testament. There's a widow, and the kinds of things she had to go through in order to have her needs taken care of. For a while, he, that is the judge, refused because he's unjust. But afterward, he said to himself, though I neither fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, this language means she keeps showing up, keeps showing up, keeps showing up, I will give her justice so she will not beat me down by her continual coming. Patio, to beat black and blue. Metaphorically, it means to intolerably annoy. Sort of like this.
Dad? Dad? Dad?
Yes, Lisa?
Dad, as you know, we've been swimming, and we've developed a taste for it. We both agree that getting our own pool is the only way to go. Now, before you respond, you must understand that your refusal would result in months and months of... Can we have a pool, Dad? 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 Can we have a pool, Dad?
I understand. Let us celebrate our new arrangement with the adding of chocolate to milk.
Like that. So the judge was not motivated by fear of the Lord. He wasn't motivated by concern for human beings. He was motivated by his own discomfort. And so, you know, what's the lesson here? Jesus ends this, not completely ends it, but he comes to the end of this parable and he says, "Hear what the unrighteous judge says." Now, what are we supposed to learn? If you're in the audience and you're hearing this parable, what are you supposed to hear? What is he throwing down next to us to consider? Well, I think it can be tempting to think, okay, this is what he's arguing. He's saying, if the widow persisted with the unrighteous judge, how much more should we persist with God? And I think that is the argument, because there's no other comparison. God's not at all like the judge. He is righteous. He is compassionate. He is not pestered. This title of this talk is about pestering, but God actually honors persistence, and that's sort of the point of this parable. God honors persistence. We're supposed to hear about the widow. If she persisted in asking an unjust judge, how much more should we persist in asking the righteous and a loving God? This is important for me to hear. My son walked away from God when he was 17, so he's now 30. I've been praying for him for all that time and for his lovely wife, my daughter-in-law, all that time. And I was talking to a friend recently this week whose daughters have taken a bad turn spiritually. And he's like, "I just feel like, why bother praying? You know, I just feel like I'm throwing Hail Marys all the time and that God's not really answering me." And I get that. It's hard to persist in prayer. And yet here this call is that we should persist in prayer. The very first verse, I skipped this part because I didn't want to give away the punchline. But in the very first verse, it says, he told them a parable. I had that part in the one earlier. But to the effect that they ought always to pray and not lose heart. And so the thing about this, the widow, is that she kept appealing to the judge. She didn't lose heart, even though he was unlikely to give her anything at all. She just kept at it. And Jesus is calling on us to persist in prayer as well. To keep asking. So keep praying to God is sort of the heart of this passage. And Jesus goes on to say in our passage, "And will not God give justice to his elect," that is his chosen, his own, "who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will give justice to them speedily." Now here's a little hiccup. They're praying day and night. Where's the speedily? Will he delay long over them? I think often we have to answer this with yes. Sometimes we do have to delay long. This is a little odd to me. He's calling us to persist and not lose heart, and he's claiming God will answer quickly. I think often in the Bible, passages that deal with wisdom tell us things that are generally true, even if they're not always true. "Raise a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they will not depart from it," says no one who has a kid that walked away from God. Right? It's generally true, but it's not always true. And it's generally true that God acts quickly, but not always true. But we're still supposed to persist. He will provide justice. Now, the passage Patrice did a couple weeks ago is more general, making requests, asking God for things you need. This is more specifically focused on justice. Have you been praying for justice lately? I don't know, maybe it's a function of age, but I just keep praying that God would come back and be the just judge once and for all. When I see these horrible things happening in the world and in our community, God, would you please come back and judge? Will you give relief to the people that are being knocked down? Will you deal with the perpetrators once and for all? So God does provide justice. In Psalm 146, we read, God vindicates the oppressed. Okay, that's great. But if they're oppressed, that means they haven't yet been vindicated. And gives food to the hungry. Well, they're hungry, so they haven't yet been fed. The Lord releases the imprisoned. They are in prison. See, in each case, the things that are mentioned are things people have been suffering from for a time. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up all who are bent over. The Lord loves the godly. The Lord protects those residing outside their native land. He lifts up the fatherless and the widow, but he opposes the wicked. This is what God's like. He provides justice. And God's justice has two components. Part of God's justice is retributive. That is, you do wrong and you're punished for the wrong you do. In Ezekiel chapter 7 through 9, God says over and over and over again, I will not spare the wicked. When he's revealing himself to Moses, part of his self-description is that he will not leave the guilty unpunished. So his justice is retributive, but his justice is also reparative or restorative or redemptive. These words, I'm going to use them as the same. It's reparative. And so it does provide, for instance, how does God repair the fact that every human being stands guilty before him? How does he fix that? Because the retributive part, if that's all God's justice was retribution, we would all be headed toward hell. Because God's standard is perfection, and who could say they're perfect? And so the fact that God's justice is also reparative, that he tries to provide a way to have a relationship with him, super important. In the book of Isaiah, God says, I looked around for someone to solve the problem of human sin, and there was no one. So I said, I'll solve it myself. And the way he solved it was to send the person of Jesus, who is God in flesh, to atone for human sin. He provides a way to be just like we'd never sinned, even though we're full of sin. He has delivered us, Paul writes in Colossians 1, from the domain of darkness, and he's transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption. We have redemption in the beloved Son, the forgiveness of sins. And so part of God's reparation, part of God's restitution, part of God's recovery of us and his redemption of us is he provides a way to have access to him through Christ. Thank God for that. We'd all be in so much trouble. But part of his reparative justice too is that he provides for needs. That's what we're reading in that psalm. Yes, but when? You ever hear this phrase? Justice delayed is justice denied. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote this in his letter from a Birmingham jail, but he didn't coin the term. We can find expressions of this that go all the way back to the 1600s. That justice delayed is justice denied. And I think that's absolutely true if we could stick the clause on the end of the sentence in this world. In God's economy, justice is never denied. Ever. Either the wicked are atoned for because of what Christ did on the cross, and the justice isn't denied there because a payment's been made, or someone doesn't change their mind and they stand before God and they are separated from him forever. Even if it's delayed in God's economy, it's never denied. There will always be a response from God to injustice. Why do we have to keep waiting? I don't have any slides on this, but I thought it might be worth running through some of this. I was sitting down with some buddies this week in a men's study group, and I just asked them, why do we have to wait? Maybe you could ponder that for a second. Why wait? Why not an immediate response? Why not what Jesus seemed to imply that God would respond swiftly? Why not that? I'll just run through a few thoughts, and maybe you've got a few as well. I think one reason there's a delay sometimes is the answer is no. Jesus said, Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. And the answer was no. Or the answer is not yet. That something is delaying the response. It could be that what you want is not what God wants. It could be that you're waiting but not asking. James 4 says this, you don't have because you don't ask God. Do you ever have that thought? Like, I feel so impatient. When's God going to act? And God's like, have you actually talked with me about this? You laugh because it's true. I frequently am irritated by things I've never asked him for. James says you don't have because you don't ask. But the next thing he says is, or you ask, but it's with wrong motives. So you can consume it on your lusts. And so maybe what you want is actually rooted in some sinful desire you have. It's not really God's will. Lord, please make my wife treat me with respect. Nope. You want glory, Lee? Get it from me. And maybe sometimes I'll give it to you through your wife. But me, I'm the one you're supposed to depend on for this. John 5:44, read it and weep. It could be that what God's withholding because of some sinful thing you're engaged with. This horrible verse in 1 Peter 3 that says to husbands that if you don't live with your wife in an understanding way, your prayers will be hindered. Well, that sucks. It could be, and I think a lot of times people stop persisting for this reason, so I want to bring it up. Sometimes people stop praying because they're like, well, you know, free will. That's like God's reverse Uno card, right? Well, free will, can't do anything about it. And I don't think it's really true. I don't think free will means God's hands are tied. You look at Exodus 23:24, God sent hornets to drive out the nations that were in the land. Can you imagine that? He didn't make them leave. He certainly made them willing to leave. Jesus appeared to Saul, this great persecutor of the church. Why are you persecuting me? I don't even know who you are. I'm Jesus whom you're persecuting. Okay, that'll turn a life around, won't it? Paul had free will, and yet God intervened. God judged Pharaoh, and he judged the nation. And they kept pretending like they feared God, but eventually they did. They were so beaten down by God's judgments, he didn't make them change their minds. He just made them willing to change their mind because they realized that this God has now had plagues that are against every single God that we have here in Egypt. Every God we have, there was a plague for. Okay, leave. Made them willing. Ananias and Sapphira were judged because they sold property and the property was theirs. The money they made from the property was theirs. Not a problem. But they lied and claimed that they made less on the property than they actually made. And they kept some back. I'll tell you one thing. If God's starting something new, don't screw around with him. Because they died. And then what happened? All the people, the fear of the Lord fell on the whole church. Did he make their free will not work? No, he just made them willing to focus on him instead of the horizontal realm. All I'm saying is free will does not actually tie God's hands, but free will might mean God's going to engage in a process that's much longer. And I think maybe a key thing about waiting on God, and I hope you take this part to heart, is that God may have us wait because it's more important to him that our relationship with him grows than we get what we want. God is a relational being. He wants to have a relationship with us. And as I'm praying to him about my son and my daughter-in-law, I could just keep asking every day, keep asking, but what happens is my relationship with him improves. My confidence in him grows. My hope in him increases. And as that relationship grows, as my hope grows, there is an outcome for my waiting that is far beyond the thing I'm even asking for. God thinks your confidence in him, which is a relational confidence, we call it faith, he thinks your confidence in him is so important that it's more precious, he says, than gold. Boy, I dream I could run across a hoard of gold sometime. I just heard there was a shipwreck found off the coast of South America. Gold, I tells you. They had gold there, and someone just found a cache of Roman coins. I'm like, wow, that'd be awesome. And God's like, that's nothing. I wish you'd be more excited to grow in your confidence in me, because that's more valuable than gold. Wow. And so sometimes God has us wait so that we could grow in our confidence in him, in our relationship with him, in our intimacy with him. Direct experiences of God acting in power does not sustain faith. Look at Israel. Miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle. And as soon as they bump up against thirst or hunger, they're like, oh! They're like, boy, those people are so stupid. Hey, that's us. God said, when you go into the land, in Deuteronomy 6 and Deuteronomy 8, and I make you well off because I promised I would make the land flow with milk and honey, and you become wealthy, this is what's going to happen. You're going to say, the strength of my own arm did this. Or you're going to say, who is the Lord? So abundance doesn't necessarily strengthen our relationship with God, and that's more important to God than anything. Hardship, in fact, often draws us to God. Half the Psalms are laments. What are laments? They're complaints. This is what you say, God, but this is what I'm experiencing. What happens when you complain? The truth about God gets driven into your bones. That's the way it works for me, anyway. Hardship tests, purifies like heat under gold or silver. Our faith, our confidence in God, according to many passages, including 1 Peter 1. So God places a higher value on his relationship with you than on what you want from him. You know, the accusation Satan made to God about Job is, Job thinks you just have instrumental value. He's in it for what he can get from you. And God began this process of revealing who he was to Job, you know, in hardship, but also in showing up personally with him. But I think a lot of times we see God as just having instrumental value. We're in it for what he might give us, and we're irritated when he doesn't. But God has intrinsic value. And part of waiting is that we learn this lesson. The process of waiting should shift our attention to our relationship with God, even over what we want. And lastly, if you want this, email me and I'll send you the Why Wait sheet so you can look it over at your leisure. God has a longer and a more complex plan in play. It affects you. It pertains to you, it's good for you, but it's not actually about you. You know, when God spoke to Abraham and said, you know, the nation you produce is going to be enslaved to another country for a very long time, and then I'll bring you back to the land. The reason you're not going to be in the land for 400 years is because the sin of the Amorites is not yet filled to overflowing. Because when they came back into the land, they took the land and they drove out everyone who was there, the Amorites. But why the delay? Why the wait to get into the land? Because God wasn't prepared to judge them because their sin hadn't reached a peak. Well, that's a long and complex plan, isn't it? It pertains to Israel, but it's not about them. Acts 17 says God guides human history so people would seek him. This takes time. In Revelation chapter 6, the people who'd been beheaded, who were martyrs, are at the altar before God, and they're saying to him directly, "How long? How long will you delay your justice?" And God's answer is a little frightening. Not enough people have died yet. The testimony of these people was more important than their life. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. When a Romanian pastor was here, Joseph Tsan, he described being taken into the precinct and questioned over and over and over again. At one point, the guard took out a gun and put it at his head and said, "Don't you realize I have the power to kill you?" And he says, "Well, you have the power to kill, but I have the power to die." And the guy was shaken because he didn't have a fear of death. That's all I'm going to say about that. I sound like Forrest Gump. But if you want to sort of think about this, I'll pass it on to you if you ask for it. All right. Often we pray and nothing seems to happen. Waiting on God is a very prominent theme in the Bible. And keeping confident in God, which is what I've been pounding on here in the last few seconds, is critically important. A critically important part of waiting on God and is you persist in prayer because you believe he'll act. You believe he's good. You believe he's in charge. You believe he's just. You believe he's powerful. And so you maintain that confidence in him in spite of hearing nothing. And the last thing he says in this proverb is sort of interesting. "Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" What an odd way to end this little instruction. He is the Son of Man. I'm sure the listeners had no idea what he was talking about. He knew he was going to die to atone for sin. He knew he was going to leave. He knew that God was going to begin reaching non-Jews with this gospel, with his good news for a really long time. And he says, "When I come back, will anyone have confidence in God?" It's quite a challenge. I think it's a challenge to us who are waiting, to keep cultivating our confidence in him. Wait for the Lord. Be strong. Let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. "For you, O Lord, I do wait. It is you, O Lord, my God, who will answer." You know, this Hebrew word wait is thought to have been derived from rope making, where strands of hemp were twisted together. And so this carries, metaphorically, it carries the idea that there's some kind of tension, and it carries the idea, too, that we're twisted into God. So we're tensely twisted into God, and that's what waiting is. "For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him. Therefore, the Lord longs to be gracious to you." There's a passage you should get in your head. The Lord longs to be gracious to you, and therefore he waits. Wait a minute. He waits. He waits on high to have compassion on you. So sometimes there's a delay because he's waiting. You're waiting because he's waiting. "For the Lord is a God of justice." How blessed are those, how happy are those who long for him like he longs for you. Do you see that relational piece that we were talking about earlier? He longs for you. Oh, if you would only long for him. "As for me, I will watch expectantly for the Lord. I'll wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me." And I think part of sustaining prayer for a long time is you realize he hears it. He hears me. I'm not getting an answer, but I know he hears me. And I think while you're waiting, you know, waiting's not just letting time pass. You need to do important things while you wait. So part of waiting on God is you keep reminding yourself about his nature. What is he like? This is why I've memorized scripture where God describes himself. So I can keep running it through my mind. I can keep gnawing on it like a dog gnaws on a bone. He himself has said, I'll never leave you. I will never forsake you. Well, that's a description of God. And so we say with confidence, if God is for me, who can be against me? Who is man that I should be afraid of him? Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. There's many such passages like this. If God didn't spare his own son, Romans 8, but gave him up for us all, how will he not with him freely give us all things? Keep reminding yourself about his nature. Meditate on his self-descriptions in the Word. Boy, that's a great way to spend your time. Reflect on what he says about himself. Reflect on his promises. Reflect on what he says about his character. Look at his behavior in history. And frankly, look at his behavior in your history. How many times has he rescued you? How many times has he provided for you? How many times have I gotten a certain amount of money the day before I needed that exact amount of money? Initially, I wasn't that thrilled with it. I was like, oh man, I'm getting ahead. And the next day, car repair that costs exactly what I got. Oh, God gives, God takes away. And then I went, wait a minute, this is a just-in-time God I'm dealing with. He gave me what I needed before I needed it, so I had to spend zero time fretting. Isn't that amazing? This hasn't happened just once. How about you? You have stories like that? I've got stories like that. Why is it when I was coming back home from Cleveland and I hit freezing fog and I'm pumping the brakes and nothing's happening and I see myself sliding right toward a police officer standing at a bumper on the side of the road, the van suddenly slid past and rolled by? I honest to God looked for handprints on the side of my van. He has rescued me before. It's great, good for me to recall these things. You know what confirmation bias is? Confirmation bias is when you have a narrative in your head that you think is true, and what happens, and this is very human, is you only notice evidence for that narrative, and you don't notice evidence against it. If you're an ungrateful person, you will notice evidence why God is not reliable. You will not notice evidence for it. But confirmation bias can actually work for you. It's great in marriages and friendships, by the way. If you spend time delighting in and enjoying someone, you're going to tend to notice things they do that are delightful. If you tend to disdain people, you're going to tend to notice all this evidence why it's right to disdain them. This is human nature. I'm sorry. But you can make it work for you by choosing to delight in people, delighting your spouse, delighting your friends, and in this case, delighting God. And as you do, your eyes, your peepers are going to kind of be opened, and you're going to see what he's up to. Probably haven't heard that word peeper since you were a kid, have you? And I think gratefully considering your future with him. I'm glad that one day this will all be resolved. When I think about myself or other people who are suffering with health issues, I'm like, someday we're going to eat this superfood called the tree of life, and it will take care of all of our diseases. That'll be good. No one will be gluten intolerant then. I'm going to order extra gluten. I think, secondly, part of waiting on God, again, is not letting time pass. Part of it is keep seeking him while you wait. This may seem obvious, but seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his face continually. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. That is, without faith, meaning without confidence in him, it's impossible to please him. Because he who comes to God must believe that he is, that is, he exists, and that he's a rewarder of those who seek him. This is, how do we persist? God will reward me for seeking him, persisting. Unlike the judge who's worn out, God's delighted when we persist because it demonstrates our confidence in him, which is more precious than gold. I love those who love me. Well, me too. Anyone who's a fan of mine, I'm a fan of. But those who diligently seek me, he says, will find me. There's a solid. Draw near to God, and he will draw near you. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. I think, too, part of waiting is lamenting. Lamenting is simply going to God and discussing with him the mismatch between what he says he's like and what he's promised and what you're experiencing. You know, in Psalm 13, you see this, where you said this, but I'm experiencing that. Psalm 42 and 43, which are probably one psalm, he keeps talking to himself. Why are you disquieted, soul? Psalm 25 is a wisdom psalm. It's a lament and wisdom. So he keeps going back and forth between my life stinks, and then he'll stop and address his audience and say, this is what it is to follow God. In fact, the entire Psalm 25 is an acrostic. And if you look at the first, an acrostic, you know what that is, right? You don't need an antifungal cream for an acrostic. An acrostic is that a series of letters, usually alphabetical acrostics, mean A, and the first word has the letter A as the first position, and the second line has B. Of course, this would be in Hebrew. And so this is an acrostic. You know that song? L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore. So that's an acrostic song, right? An acrostic psalm is this. And the interesting thing is when you look at the position of the first line, second, middle line, and last line, it actually spells the Hebrew word learn. What are you supposed to learn when you read this psalm? You're supposed to learn to keep seeking God and lamenting until he responds. So I think maybe sometimes we're not that good. I think, and maybe even in this fellowship, I find people are reluctant to complain to God. They are unhappy about something, but they won't tell him they're unhappy about something. They'll just stuff truth in it. And I think it's great that we have truth available to stuff into the cracks of our faith, but actually our faith is cracked in ways that needs us to express how we're feeling. He knows how you feel. Tell him. I mean, look at Job. God, I think you put a mark on my foot so you could follow me around and ambush me. I think you like torturing me. How long, O Lord? How long? Don't you care? Are you there? These are all lines that are in laments. And I think waiting should take us to that, because I think it does, as we lament, we grow in our knowledge and confidence in God. And when he answers, we're more likely to notice it. I find that when I don't lament, that is the James 4 problem, when I don't actually ask God for stuff, and he gives me the stuff I want, I don't even notice it. Like a kid at Christmas, like, dunk, next. Lament. I think faithfully do what you already know how to do. Because, you know, God has certain requests, demands, commands that he's laid out. Do those things that you already know while you're waiting. You know, don't just sit down and go, I'm done. In fact, Psalm 25, the very end of this psalm, this wisdom psalm, this lament, he says, may integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait for you. What is he saying? May I continue to have integrity. May I continue to be righteous while I'm waiting. Because we can just let go of the rope and get into all kinds of sinful thoughts and behaviors, actions and inactions, when we're disappointed. Wait for the Lord and keep his way. I wait for the Lord, my soul does wait, and in his word I do hope. Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord, he will deliver you. A lot of times when we're waiting, the temptation is to take matters into our own hands. Don't do that. Don't do wrong. while you wait. And I think, share your burden with others. Part of our waiting should include sharing our burden with others. So in Galatians 6:2, he says, bear one another's burdens. That's how you fulfill the law of Christ. And so it's important for us to sit down and say, would you pray with me? Or, I'm really bothered by this. This has been a weird year for me because I've started praying more. Because my wife has been distressed by this new position she has, it's been challenging, it's been difficult, and I didn't have anything I could do except pray. And so I would just say, what do you need prayer for today? And I pray for it, and I always throw in something I didn't tell her I was going to pray for, like a nice surprise, a little bit of joy, some peace, a quick resolution of a problem. I'll just pray for that, and then I'm like, so, how'd your day go? You know, and I'm listening for God having answered my prayers. I'm bearing her burden. But in bearing her burden, my confidence in God has grown. And now she's saying, I just love that I have a praying husband. Word of the wise is sufficient. So keep praying to God. Keep waiting on God as you're praying. And if some of this stuff you want more thoughts about, I did a Summer Institute workshop teaching number 4271 in 2018. I looked at the website for the 2018 XSI, and mine wasn't listed. But if you look up a teaching with this number, you can find it. And basically the topic is, what do you do when God doesn't seem there? So maybe that would be useful for you as well. If I get too many requests for the waiting on God material, I don't know what I'll do. There's a lot of people here. I guess I'll just send it out happily. Thank you. You'll have to show me how to do that because I'm just a caveman. I don't understand your modern ways. All right, so maybe you've got some thoughts, some experiences, some questions.
It's just a great topic, super relevant. And I know for me, this verse has popped out in the last year or so. It's been very helpful for, you know, navigating the things where I'm struggling, waiting on God. It's in Ephesians 3:10. And he's talking about, you know, how God reconciled the Jews and the Gentiles, Paul speaking, that God has chosen him to reveal this. But he says, God's purpose in all this was to use the church to display his wisdom in its rich variety to all the unseen rulers and authorities in the heavenly places. And that's like, there's something else entirely going on here. Mm. And when I think about that, it helps me. It's like, okay, it might be foggy to you, but there is a watching supernatural world, and God has given us this privilege to play this role. So that's been helpful to me.
That is freaking awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Back there?
Yeah, it's always a pleasure being here and listening to you do a good job of teaching. I wanted to tell you that last night I had the worst dream I've had in probably 3 or 4 years, and it was just a terrible experience. And I awakened this morning, got a couple strong cups of coffee, and turned on some Christian music, and I started meditating on the dream. And the outcome was is that I decided that recently we've had some things occur where I'm going to start talking with my sons and my daughter-in-laws and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren about the issue one, and do it in an open Christian way, and that's that.
So you're saying your restlessness in your sleep was anxiety about those conversations? Mm-hmm.
Well, it was wild. I had a couple instances in my life where I had to swim across the river to help people in trouble. And so I was swimming across the same river last night.
Okay.
And it was really dirty, and I looked over and I saw the hand of a preemie floating in the water.
Thank you. Over here and up here. Hand up so they know where to put the mic. Well, you had your hand up first.
Right, let him go.
So I'm waiting for the mic to... Oh. Looks like you can both get a mic. How about that?
In 2011, I don't know the source, but I put in my prayer book, God's answers. Yes, no, not yet. He's always on time. He's never late, but he's seldom early. And while we're waiting, we're supposed to have the faith. We're supposed to step out in faith and know that he's coming.
Thank you.
I really appreciated your message today.
Thanks. I appreciated yours. Yes, sir?
Thank you. Great message as always, Lee. Personal anecdote for your personal, your son issue. I am a wandering son, and the Lord didn't encourage me, like your story, to return to the fold until well after my parents passed away, and God still answered their prayers. And it's been our personal experience in my family, and I know throughout others I've read stories where the one who's praying incessantly did not see physically the son return from alcoholism to normal living until after they passed away. And I just wanted to give you encouragement that our God recognizes, and while we're waiting, we're trusting him. And that there's so much evidence in the world that just because we don't see it now doesn't mean we're not going to entertain them in the future in the kingdom of heaven and say, welcome, what took you so long?
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think, was it George Mueller? Had friends, some friends he prayed for, and that they would come to Christ, and the last one didn't come to Christ till after he died. And so... if I believe God plays a long game, then that means he plays a game that goes past my own life. So I'm with you on that. Yes?
There's a passage in 2 Peter that says that God is not slow, but he's waiting for more and more people to come to a saving knowledge of him.
Right. I think sometimes when we pray for justice and we want justice now, we forget that God's heart is he doesn't want to judge anyone. I think it's remarkable that at the end of time, just before God resolves everything on earth, he sends an angel throughout the whole earth to call on people to turn to Jesus. Can you believe that? That he will go well and above everything he needs to do so that people will come to him. As it says, he's not willing that any should perish. So I think part of growing in your confidence in God is realizing, for me, he loves my son and my daughter-in-law infinitely more than I do. Well, how about that? No thoughts. I'm just going to bask in the silence. Oh.
I've been widowed twice, and things are not good right now. And I am concerned about my daughter. And I have been praying about this, so this is just right for me today. Thank you.
What's your name?
Margo.
M-I-R-G-O. Margo says she's been widowed twice. She's had some hardship, and she's praying for her daughter, right? So let's pray for Margo.
I remember when I was going through a really hard time, I would sob and cry, and I would ask the Lord. I'd say, Lord, I just don't understand what's going on. I'd say, I don't understand. And all he would say to me is, trust in the Lord and lean not on your own understanding. Repeatedly, that's all I would hear him say, is trust in the Lord and lean not on your own understanding. And everything did work out okay. So
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Wow, revival's breaking out here.
Get ready. I'm really good at complaining and lamenting. Really good.
Awesome.
But you know what I realized just today, like my sister is here from Michigan, but she is a Buckeye, so back off. You know, I prayed that you would, you know, he would keep her safe in her travels here. And that was a prayer that was answered. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we have to, you know, little prayers like that, like if she would have gotten in an accident, that would have been a whole different ball game. But it's like to appreciate the little prayers that we do throw out, then I'm like, oh, he does answer. Yeah.
Yeah. All good things come from God. Are there more hands? Oh, yeah. There's another hand.
Talking about the accident, several years ago, I was in a very bad accident going down 71. Long story short, I ended up being bounced out into 71 South and ongoing traffic, did a swirly whirl around that and crashed into the barrier on the other side of 670. And the moral of the story is, when I prayed to get on the interstate that morning, I said, God, protect me from accident, injury, illness, and death, and protect everyone around me. I walked away from that with not a scratch, nothing, absolutely nothing. And I know it was God, it was Jesus who protected me that day. And so, just like you were talking about your incident, it's, I've never forgotten that, and he gets all the glory. But the prayer mattered.
I can't let my sister go. No, I'm just kidding. I want to go back to the widow, because she was the least of the least in that culture. And she was one feisty lady.
Yeah.
So she took probably a lot on herself appearing before the judge. And that teaching wants me to be her. I'm not in her situation culturally, but I want to be, this reminds me to be feisty, to keep praying, to not give up.
There's a good feisty, isn't there? I hope you will be a good feisty person. I've been around bad feisty people before. Not that pleasant. Let's go ahead and pray. God, we pray for our sister Margot. Pray that you would show up for her in a way that would remind her that you're present and you care for her. I pray you'd provide avenues of successful engagement with her daughter. I pray that you would give her joy, unexpected joy. I thank you for our time together today. I thank you for taking the time to lay this parable down so that we would be challenged to be feisty. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.